This RRFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Morning, Mark.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm not too bad, not too bad.
You're good, good. You looked a bit confused though when I had Coldplay blasting out at you.
I was just thinking maybe it's doing its thing, and it's not supposed to. It's done that to me before, and you try and talk over it. And you're like, I'm not gonna fight with it. But
this
all right.
Was purposeful. This
that's good.
This is my intro music.
That's good.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. Oh, I should say hello. This is Adatoy and Pathways to Art. It's me again, Becky Bateman. And you may notice we're on at a different time today. We're normally on at 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, the second Tuesday of the month. But today, because it's good old school holidays. And because of my fabulous guest, we had to change it to the morning. So you'll probably hear this again in a couple of hours' time. So hello, good morning, and good afternoon. And I've got the lovely Mark Pace with me today. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
From Wairarapa Archive. And you've snuck off this morning to come and join me.
Yes, absolutely. Yep, had to do it.
Excellent. The reason I've got Mark on today is that we are going to be talking about a show that is a little bit different at Aratoy. This month, because this is a social history show and not actually an artist show. And it's one that I've been curating for the last, oh, feels like forever, 2 years. And so I thought, instead of having somebody to talk at me about my show, I would have a friend of the show, friend of Aratoy, to come and be my sparring partner to talk about inventions. What a good subject.
Fantastic.
I know. So Mark has happily joined me for an hour to come and talk about inventions, and bless him, I have given him some homework, so hopefully he'll remember all of the stuff I've said to him.
Yeah, let's see, that's all from memory. I have no notes.
I mean, I've got notes. And I've been doing this for 2 years. It's been in my brain for about 2 years. So the show is actually called Patented Inventions That Change the World, and there's about, I think, 35 different inventions in the show. It's in the Transit Group Social History Gallery. And it was really quite a fun one to do. It's been on my mind for 2.5 years, I think, to do a show like this. And it all started, hilariously, with skateboards. That's where it all began, Mark. It all began with skateboards because I really wanted to do a show about the skateboarding community and have almost like talking heads of people, of skateboarders who are in the community and looking at the new skate park as it was a couple of years ago, but it all just fell apart. But I'd heard a really cool story about how skateboards were invented, and I was like, oh, that is a great story. I need to put that somewhere. And that's how all this unraveled. That's how it began. So there is a beautiful old skateboard in the exhibition that I borrowed from Tamanua. But that's where it all began. Do you know how skateboards began? Is that one of your research bits?
Yes, I did my research. Yep. Let's see if my research is accurate.
So I'll check.
It was in California.
Yep.
And it was some of the surfies wanting to recreate the thrill of riding the waves while doing it on land. I think they called it sidewalk surfing.
Something like that, yes.
And from memory, the first commercial skateboards were actually made in 1959. But before that, you would just get whatever bits of wood you could.
Yep.
You would steal your sister's roller skates.
Yes.
Stick them to the bottom of this thing.
MacGyver it together.
There's actually that famous scene that's in the first Back to the Future, where Marty McFly sees a girl. And quite often they weren't just a board. They actually often had handlebars.
So I didn't know about the handlebars.
So some of them had that. So
okay.
Obviously she had that and he pulled it off and then he used the skateboard. Now, what's that thing he's riding? So in theory, yeah, maybe Marty McFly helped become more famous, but yeah.
And did you know about the drought, the California drought that kind of kicked it all off?
No, I didn't get that far.
So there's a great podcast I listen to called 99% Invisible. Have you heard of that? Mark, you need to go home and binge listen to 99% Invisible. It's by this amazing guy called Roman Mars who talks about kind of the hidden infrastructure in things. So like it could be flag design or like sewer cover design and what things you would find on a building that you never really look at. And he did one on skateboarding, and probably this is where it kind of sunk into my brain over the last couple of years, is that there was a drought in California, and obviously being a drought there was no water, so no one could fill up their pools, and so all these empty swimming pools were just laying around. And they had these lovely curved surfaces, these lovely kind of jelly bean, kind of kidney-shaped pools that no one was using. And people were like, right, we're just going to jump in there and do this sideways surfing. It was pretty cool. It was really good. So there you go. You can go and listen to 99% Invisible and you can thank me later. All right. So today is going to work slightly differently because I've got a surprise for Mark. And I don't know if he knows about this. I've got a surprise for you later on. But I'm going to be playing a couple of bits of music that I think hopefully link to one of the inventions in the show. And then we'll have a little bit of talk about that. But before we do, Mark, I've got some questions for you. They weren't on your list, so this is right off topic. So, Mark, where's my list? Oh, here we go. Mark, what's your favourite invention ever?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one to start off with.
And we're on live here, so I can't take too long thinking about this either. Favourite invention?
Favourite invention.
That's really
I know,
hard.
It's quite hard, isn't it?
I guess doing the sort of job that I do and having the hobbies that I do, I'm gonna go right down the middle and pick the obvious and say possibly the book.
Oh, well, the book is actually in the exhibition, so good work.
Yep.
I thought you were going to say metal detector.
That was up there as well.
Because I've researched metal detector.
So that's definitely way up there as well, as is, you know, the bass guitar. So
okay.
You can actually play an electric bass guitar rather than have the big upright one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you know the history of any of those things?
Vaguely, very vaguely. I think one of them was with you know, when you had a band, you had the full upright double bass, which is, I'd love to play one.
It makes sense where the name comes from, I suppose, isn't it?
But then the other one, I think it was definitely made famous by Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
That was around the time that the bass.
Was it that late?
It would have been earlier than that, but I said made famous by him. But they had them before that. But yeah, so many of these old school bands, you see them and you have the guy with the big bass.
Even
Sting played one of them, which is really good. I'd love to jam on
one. Sting is a legend. Okay.
It probably wouldn't suit the genre that I like to play.
Possibly not.
So there's several inventions, definitely. But being a writer, probably
books.
I think books. Oh, it's really hard.
Do you want to know about how metal detecting came into the world? Because it was quite an interesting story. You might know this already, actually, being a metal detectorist.
They definitely had them during the war to look for mines.
They did. They did indeed.
And I met a guy once. I was near the beach and I was detecting and he came and he had a chat to me and he said, oh, you know, I used to use one of these during the war.
What?
I said, well, would you like to see how it's changed? And, of course, he's like, it's so light. The original one weighed a ton and he had this big backpack thing on and it was really old school technology. I assume it was something metal that made this horrible noise and that was it.
All right. Well, do you want to know? I found this just for you because I was like,
this
he's going to say metal detecting.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a twist in the tail in this. Okay. So there's a bit of blurb, but I'll get there. You're better at reading this stuff. You should be reading this. In fact, you should read this.
No.
Okay. Back in the mid 1800s, after the invention of electricity, many scientists, scholars, and gold miners started experimenting with the idea of developing a machine that could locate metal things underground, like you say. A device like this would be incredibly useful to the many prospectors still looking for gold after the gold rush, and as a result, it can make a person very, very rich. The first metal detector mentioned in history actually has nothing to do with finding metal or gold. Instead, it was used to attempt to save President James Garfield's life. He was shot in Washington, D.C. on July the 2nd, 1881, at Baltimore, and the president had been shot in the back, but luckily the wound did not kill him. Unfortunately, though, the doctors couldn't locate the bullet and Garfield continued to suffer. But on one of his visitors during the time, Alexander Graham Bell, a good name there to remember for inventors, built a metal detector specifically to help find this bullet. But sadly, his attempts are unsuccessful. It turns out the metal springs in the bed that President Garfield was lying on confused the machine and rendered it basically useless.
Yep.
President Garfield eventually died of infection on the wound in September 19, 1881. So there you go. It was used to, I think that's really quite cool.
That's an amateur mistake. It's when you're detecting and you go too close to a fence or something else and it just goes haywire.
Just goes bananas.
You know, this thing doesn't work. It's broken. No.
Yeah. I can imagine his upset. Why is this not working?
Yeah.
Because the bed is made of metal.
They have the excuse that they tried to do it first.
Yeah.
There was no one else saying, how you did it wrong. They
that's
didn't
true.
Know it was wrong.
That's true.
So you can do that's it. When you're first, you're allowed to get away with it.
Well, that's true. Okay. Would you like our first song, Mark,
Let's
to get
it.
Snuck Let's into our first invention? Okay. And I'm not going to tell you what this is, but afterwards you'll hopefully realise what I've done and go, this is obvious. Okay. I'll tell you what it is after the music. Enjoy. Let's press play. There we go.
Bicycle.
I want to ride my
bicycle.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
You say black,
I say white.
You say bar,
I say bite.
You say shark,
I say him. And yours was never my scene, and I don't like Star Wars.
You say Rose,
I say Roy.
You say God,
give me a choice.
You say Lord,
I say Christ. I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein, or Superman.
All I wanna do is ride.
Mark, did you enjoy that?
Definitely. I got to love a bit of Queen.
I do love a bit of Queen. Queen is one of my favourite bands, I think. I do love a bit of Queen. But could you work out, shockingly, what invention that was all about?
I'm going to guess bicycles.
Correct.
Rather than electric guitars. Or...
yes. Yeah. I snuck that one in. I thought, he's going to get this one. Bicycle. Do you have a bicycle, Mike? Do you have a bicycle, Mark?
Sort of, yes. I have a mountain bike
that
I got when I got it for Christmas when I was 11.
Wow.
And it was my bike that I was going to use to ride to the bus stop, which was, it was a decent distance.
Yeah.
It wasn't just down the road. No, you biked for ages to the outskirts of town.
Okay.
And you locked up your bike at, there was a nice farmer that had a very long driveway. We were able to put our bikes down the length of the driveway and,
I was going to say, where do you bring your bike if you're getting the bus? Did you have to kind of bring your bike with you? But no, you locked it up.
Yeah, so it was chained to the fence. And
yeah.
Then you caught the bus, then you got the bend, then you came back and then you rode home, rain or shine.
Yes.
Back in the days.
Back in the days.
Yeah, so, and I've still got that bike. Needs a little bit of, well, actually needs a lot of work, but I still have that bike. It still works.
That's quite impressive.
So that would have been, when was that? 1994, I got that.
Wow.
Well, I suppose technically Christmas 93, started using it in 1994. I still have that same bike.
Well, would you like to see the bike that we've got at Aratoy in the exhibition? Look at this.
Yes.
This is a good looking bike.
Ooh.
Look at that. This is called a safety bike. I love it. It's kind of halfway between a modern, you can kind of see where the modern bike comes from, can't you?
Yes.
But it's halfway between a penny farthing and a kind of modern bike today. So you'll notice there's no chain. There's no gears.
No.
Like the seat is kind of halfway up the, what would you call that? The bike, kind of in the middle.
The frame. It'll have a technical name.
It will have a technical name, the thing. But if you look online now, you'll be able to see this, and I'll put these on our socials later. But this is a really odd-looking bike. You know, the pedals are on the front wheel. Yeah, there's no chain, nothing like that. And, yeah, this is called the Bantam Safety Bike.
Really?
And I just think it's the most amazing thing. I think it was only around for a couple of years, because then obviously people went, hang on, we can evolve this even better. But do you know the history of a bike, Mark? Do you know where the bike came from?
I know some of it. So I know the first bikes had no pedals.
Yeah, they were kind of hobby horses.
Yeah, which would be, you know, it'd be okay on flat ground. But if you're going downhill, I bet they didn't have brakes either.
No, or uphill.
It could have got interesting. They had them for quite a while. I did have the opportunity to get on a penny farthing.
Did you? What was it like?
They have one set up in a museum. I think it's in Christchurch or Dunedin.
Okay.
Sorry, I forget which one.
Yes.
But they've got it set up and you can stand up and you can climb on this thing and you can actually pedal it. So it's a long way up.
How they
got on and off these things, I don't know. I mean, you have to be pretty brave. And it's really hard to pedal something with a huge wheel. That big, but... If you do want to try it, you can. If it's still there, you can try it.
Well, they are redoing their Christchurch. Because I think it's in Christchurch, because it's in that shopping area,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just there. But you kind of have to stand on something, yes. Then get on it.
Yes, you'd always have to bring yourself a small ladder. Well, the bike was actually invented in 1816/1817 because it was all about a volcano. Do you realise this? It was all about a volcano. And this was another amazing story that I found whilst... researching this. In 1815, Mount Tambora, was a volcano in Indonesia, exploded. And it was the largest volcanic eruption ever recorded and sent up huge amounts of ash, rock and dust into the atmosphere, which then blew across the world. And in 1816, it was known as the year without summer because it was just so cold. You know, across the world, temperatures plummeted, snow fell, frozen birds fell out the sky. Harvest failed and the cost of grain and corn went sky high. And you kind of think, okay, yeah, volcano. How does this relate to a bicycle? This, I think, is, I love those connections that, you know, there's the consequences of things. So, as I said, cost of grain was really high. And so, as food was really expensive and scarce, people weren't able to feed their horses. So how are they going to move around, Mark? How are they going to move around? So a rather clever guy in Germany called Baron Karl von Drass came up with the idea of a long machine with a handlebars, basically a hobby horse, a padded seat, a wooden wheels, a way to get around without the need of an animal. And this also meant no food, no grooming needed, and no waste behind left on the road. And this invention was known as the hobby horse and paved the way for modern bicycles. I love that. I love that a volcano, we don't have any food, we don't have anything to feed our horses. I'm going to make a new invention. I just love that. Do you know what also happened that year with the year without summer? Frankenstein was written. It's same kind of time, though. These, you know, Mary Shelley and her gang were in Italy and they were stuck inside and they made up these stories and Mary Shelley made up Frankenstein. There you go. All because of a volcano. What if that volcano never happened?
That's like being stuck indoors. That's the best time to do writing.
Yeah.
Like this at the moment. Winter. Perfect time to be inside doing it.
Well, I mean, which book are you on now? You're 22nd?
No.
55th?
Lucky 13th.
Lucky 13th. Okay. Well, you must be doing a lot of writing now then.
At the moment, yeah, it's good. Like I said, it's freezing cold in the morning. You're like, yes. I'm just going to stay inside, heat pump on, and you can just do some writing.
Done.
So it's good.
Now, Mark, you've got something to share with us for
bicycle,
haven't
so
you?
We
were talking during the break. Like, I've got something to say.
In terms of my history with bikes, so family on dad's side's Australian, and we had this book growing up, and it was one of Banjo Patterson's poems.
Okay.
And it's about, what starts off about a horseman who then gets a bicycle.
Okay.
So it's if you've heard of it, it's called Mulga Bill's Bicycle. So I'll attempt to read this without venturing too much into Aussieisms. I'll try and stay sounding like a Kiwi.
Okay.
So it's not too long, but very entertaining. And this was written in 1890-something. So it's an amazing, amazing poem. So if you haven't heard it, you're in for a treat. "'Twas Mulga Bill from Eagle Hawk that caught the cycling craze. He turned away the good old horse that served him many days. He dressed himself in cycling clothes resplendent to be seen. He hurried off to town and bought a shining new machine. As he wheeled it through the door with an air of lordly pride, the grinning shop assistant said, 'Excuse me, can you ride?' 'See here, young man,' said Mulga Bill, 'from Walgett to the sea, from Conroy's Gap to Castlereagh, there's none can ride like me. I'm good all round at everything, as everybody knows. Although I'm not one to talk, I hate a man that blows. But riding is my special gift, my chiefest sole delight. Just ask a wild duck, can it swim? A wildcat, can it fight? There's nothing clothed in hair or hide, built of flesh or steel. There's nothing walks or jumps or runs on axle, hoof or wheel. But what I'll sit while hide will hold and girths and straps are tight, I'll ride this here two-wheeled concern right straight away at sight. 'Twas Mulga Bill from Eagle Hawk that sought his own abode, that perched above Dead Man's Creek beside the mountain road. He turned the cycle down the hill and mounted for the fray, but ere he'd gone a dozen yards, it bolted clean away. It left the track and through the trees just like a silver streak. It whistled down an awful slope towards Dead Man's Creek. It shaved a stump by half an inch. It dodged a big white box. The very wallaroos in fright went scrambling up the rocks. The wombats hiding in their caves dug deeper underground, and Mulga Bill, white as chalk, sat tight to every bound. It struck a stone and gave a spring that cleared a fallen tree. It raced beside a precipice as close could be. And then as Mulga Bill let out one last despairing shriek, it made a leap of 20 feet into the Dead Man's Creek. 'Twas Mulga Bill from Eagle Hawk that slowly swam ashore. He said, 'I've had some narrow shaves and lively rides before. I've rode a wild bull round a yard to win a 5-pound bet, but this was the most awful ride that I've encountered yet. I'll give that two-wheeled outlaw best, it's shaken all my nerve, to feel it whistle through the air and plunge and buck and swerve. It's safe at rest in Dead Man's Creek, we'll leave it lying still. Our horse's back is good enough henceforth for Mulga Bill.'"
I love it.
So that was, I think it's got the date here somewhere. It was definitely the 1890s, I'm sure of it. Of course, yeah, he's more famous for composing the lyrics for Waltzing Matilda, but that one as well, grew up with that one.
Ah, I was thinking that the name sounds familiar. There you go. Very good. Well, maybe he was riding a bike like this, because it looks like it would be pretty difficult to...
Sound like it had brakes. So.
No. Then that's probably more likely. Well, this one was actually invented in 1880. So very close to the poem, actually. So maybe. Maybe.
So he may have been writing that.
Maybe. Maybe. All right. Shall we go for another piece of music? This one's going to be a bit trickier. One of my favourite pieces of music. But this might be tricky for you to work out what invention is going to be. All right?
Okay.
Okay. There we go. Here it is.
We'll be right back.
there you go. They mark my, one of my favourite songs of all time. Oh, good old Oasis. What's the story, Morning Glory? Any ideas what invention that would lead to? Not the bicycle.
No. No, and again, probably not the guitar.
No, no.
No.
Come on, you can work it out. It was the Walkman, Mark. The Walkman.
This
was my first album I bought when I was a little teenage girl in England. Oasis, because I had been given a Walkman, like probably many teenagers had for Christmas one year, and my parents had given me two tapes to go with it. One of Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat musical. I mean, I still love that musical, just amazing. But also Holst the Planets. And I was like, I need some other music to listen to. And so my very first tape, my very first album I bought with my own personal money was Oasis, What's the Story, Morning Glory. So it always holds a bit of a spot in my heart for that song. But did you have a Walkman when you were growing up?
Sort of. So I had a, I shouldn't call it a Walkman. I had a small portable cassette player. that's all we'll call
right.
It. It was this clunky black thing. It
yes.
was terrible. The batteries didn't last all that long. Right. It was not great. Dad, however, did.
Okay.
Dad was a runner. He was a marathon runner, and I tried to keep up with him a couple of times, even when I was fighting fit, couldn't do it. But every once in a while, he might want to listen to music or anything. So yeah. he used to go to, because half our family's in Australia, he would go to Aussie and he would visit the family, and then he would go to all the duty-free shops. And one year, this was in the 80s, he came back with an actual Sony Sports Edition Walkman.
Whoa.
So it was this white thing. It was really compact. It was very, very skinny.
Yeah, because
But proper Sony, made in Japan. I'd hate to think what he paid for it. It would have been quite a bit of money.
Does he still have it?
So he passed away 10 years ago, and of course, you know, Mum had her stuff. I was like, do you just take this?
Just take it.
So I inherited the Walkman. And the cool thing was, you know, he was still listening to it. Like, he'd be at work and he'd be listening to it, or he'd go for a walk.
Yeah.
And so when I opened it up, it still had the last cassette that he listened to in it, which was the best of Cat Stevens.
Oh, bless.
You've got good taste, Dad.
Oh, well done.
So it still had that in it. So, I mean, I'm not, I don't really have cassettes. I'm not onto that. So I've got a good friend who's into all that music stuff. And I said, well, would you like a Sony Walkman? You know, it doesn't quite work anymore, but you know, he's like, absolutely. So it's gone to a good home.
Good.
He has restored it. As far as I know, it works again.
Wow.
So it's still exists. It still works, you know, high quality stuff. But so I have seen an actual Sony Sports Edition Walkman.
Wow. I'm not sure if I had the Walkman, but I had maybe a knockoff copy.
That's I can imagine what I had. Yeah, yes. And in terms of, you know, the music, the cassettes, I didn't buy. Well, actually, I bought cassettes, but they were blank.
Oh,
and then
did
you would do all the mixing of you know, mixtapes or just
record it off the radio.
You would trade a mate. I was like, well, I've got this album, you've got that album. Should we dub some copies? Which is a bit dodgy, I suppose. But, and you would also wait with when you're listening to the radio for your song to come on and press
record,
really annoyed when the DJ would start talking over the end of it. You're like, no, stop, be quiet, you're ruining it. But yeah.
Absolutely. I think you and I are fairly similar ages, Mark, because I remember doing that very much, like sitting next to the speaker, listening to the top 40.
Absolutely. There was a TV show, a radio show here called The Axe Attack.
Okay.
And it was every Tuesday night from 8 till 10, they would play heavy metal.
Right.
And there was one that was coming up, and they had the jump. I don't know how they did this, but they had the new Metallica album.
Right.
So this was when Reload came out, 1997, and they said, oh, we've got a couple of tracks from this. So you're sitting there waiting for the show to come on, waiting to hit record these two tracks that hadn't even been released yet. So I remember doing that and then recording it and having this tape that had these things on them.
Yep. And, I mean, the Walkman was such an amazing invention because I think it was the first time it was your personal music, wasn't it?
Yep.
You didn't have to share what your dad was listening to, although Cat Stevens is quite cool.
Oh, definitely.
But my dad's music, not quite so cool. You know, and you're like, you could actually listen to something on your own, outside, take it for a walk, because I think otherwise, you know, it's kind of a boombox on your shoulder, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, I liked it at school as well. You know, I wasn't the most popular kid in school, so, you know, if you don't have a lot of friends and things to talk to, you can listen to some music.
Absolutely.
Which is brilliant. You can go off and you can be in your own zone and you're not thinking about, oh, don't want to be here.
And it's amazing to think that what we have today has evolved from a Walkman.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, I've got the information here, Mark, and I'm probably going to butcher this poor man's name. Masura Ibuka, something like that, invented the Sony Walkman cassette player when he wanted to play his music privately on a long flight. I think it was opera he wanted to listen to. The first model, the TPS L2, was released in 1979, and it proved to be a huge hit. It was just obviously such a simple machine, but it changed the norm. Previously, walking around with headphones would have been seen as rude and antisocial, but it soon became accepted behaviour. So the simple invention changed, you know, except I think that's fantastic. I think that's so interesting. And today people are constantly walking around with like earpods in and things, aren't they? And it's all because of the Walkman. Amazing. What was your favourite album then, Mark? If mine was Oasis, what were you listening to?
Now there's favourite album and first album bought.
Oh, okay. What was your first album then?
So the first album I bought, it wasn't on cassette, it was on CD. It's slightly embarrassing. But when you're sort of 12, 13, it was very, very cool.
Okay.
It was the soundtrack to the 1995 movie Mortal Kombat. So it had that really rocking, you know, theme song, and again it was very, you know, electronic-y, which is not really my style, but I remember the movie being like the coolest thing ever. So I saved up and I bought the soundtrack for Mortal Kombat. The first cassette album I had was given to me by my brother, and it was Ride the Lightning by Metallica.
Whoa.
That was awesome. Quite cool. So I remember having that and listening to that. It was a terrible copy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the song would cut out in bits, and it would, I don't know whether the tape had been chewed up a bit, so it would get a bit wobbly in places. Yeah. But the first album that I had on cassette, the first album I actually had at all, was Ride the Lightning by Metallica, and it's one of my favourite albums.
That's quite a cool one. When I was looking for a Walkman, I was sure I had a Walkman. I was sure I had my Walkman somewhere. And I emptied the attic, emptied all of these boxes. I know it's here somewhere. Couldn't find it anywhere. I was gutted. But I did find my original album, this Oasis album tape cassette. But all the tape inside had just disintegrated. And I was absolutely gutted. Gutted, Mark. I was like, no. I mean, it is 35, 40 years old.
Yeah, but that's what happens. You know, people need to realise that, and I'll put my archivist hat on now, is that these mediums don't survive. They don't last forever. I had two cassettes. One of them was my christening, which is the weirdest thing because I'd never heard it before. And we managed to digitise it, but you're listening to it and you hear this baby crying like, that's you.
Oh my God, that's you.
So it was one of Mum's friends. He was a Māori minister. And he said, oh, we can do that. So we have a recording of that. And we also have one from 1970, let's get this right, two of Mum and Dad's wedding.
No.
On cassette. So, again, I was given these cassettes because Mum doesn't really have the means to play them, but, of course, we can digitise them.
Yes.
So we managed to digitise. I think it was the Mum's wedding one. We digitised it. We got right to the end and the tape disintegrated.
Just no.
We managed to digitise it before it did that. But these formats here, they do not last. They do last longer than some of the more digital things.
Really?
So if you burn data to a CD.
Yeah.
Well, say if you make a music CD and you burn it and you create your mixed tape on cassette, the cassette's probably going to last quite a bit longer.
Really? Because I would think it would be the opposite.
No, people don't realise that.
Interesting. Okay, yes, because I think we're going through a bit of a stage at home of making sure all our photos are digitised. And I said to Andy, we probably need to print these out because actually there's not – in the future, in 10 years' time, we're not going to be able to read this data.
And you only need one tiny little bit of code to become corrupted, and the whole thing will not open. So I've had people say that they've had these old family photos that were digital, and they went to look at them and was like, I can't open any of them. So, that's what happens.
Okay, we'll just have to print them all out. Okay, you're doing really well on this, Mark. Now, before we do our next song, I have a game/challenge for you. Now, don't look at me like that. It's fun.
The last one was hard.
It's even more fun. Don't worry. Okay. So in the exhibition, there's an area called First Things First. What came first? And I've got three inventions.
Okay.
And you've got to work out which one came first. I'm going to give you some time. So we'll listen to the next song and you can have a little think. Okay. So don't panic. Okay. So the list is spoon. Okay. Fork and table knife. What came first out of those three? See if you can put them in order, and we'll listen to another song while you're thinking about it.
Mm.
And this one, you might know, Mark, you might not, but it's one from my neck of the woods down in Somerset, and it might be that I start talking quite Somerset after this. All right, enjoy. We'll be right back.
my tractor through your haystack last night. Ooh, ah, ooh, ah. I threw me pitchfork at your dog to keep quiet. Ooh, ah, ooh, ah. Now someone's telling me that you move right in me. Ooh, ah, ooh, ah. Come on now, darling, you got something I need. Cause I got a brand new combine harvester and I'll give you the key. Come on now, let's get together in perfect harmony. I got 20 acres and you've got 43. Now I got a brand new combine harvester and I'll give you the key. She made me laugh. I'll stick by you, I'll give you all that you need. We'll have twins and triplets, I'm a man built for speed. And you know I'll love you, darling, so give me your hand. Come on now, let's get together in perfect harmony. I got 20 acres and you've got 43. Now I got a brand new combine harvester and I'll give you the key.
Oh, she's a lovely bit of stuff and all.
For 7 long years I've been alone in this place. Sleep in the kitchen, it's a proper disgrace. Now if I cleaned it up, would you change your mind? I'll give up drinking scrumpy and that larder alive. Cause I gotta drink you from my harvester and I'll give you the key. Come on now, let's get together in perfect harmony. I got 20 acres and you got 43.
Who loves me, baby?
When we grand couple let that last words of dance, I wore brand new gaiters and me corduroy pants. In your new Sunday dress with your perfume smelling grand, we had our photos taken us sold in end. Now I got a brand new combine harvester and I'll give you the key. I think that you and me should stop this gallivanting. And will you marry me? Cause I got a brand new combine harvester and I'll give you the key.
Arr, you're a fine looking woman and I can't wait to get me hands on your land.
There you are, Mark. Now, don't tell me you've heard that one before.
To be totally honest, yes.
What?
I don't know how I came across it. I came across it by accident. Maybe YouTube was playing all this weird stuff and I was like, what is this? And to be like hand on heart honest, I actually played this song on my radio show about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
No way.
Because I'm a little bit cheeky. If someone tells me I really hate that song, I will dedicate it to them the next time I do a radio show.
And Who was it?
Poor suffering wife is like,
oh no.
That Kyvester song, I hate it. It's like,
Ooh, interesting.
So then the next one of this is going out to a very special person. No, the words also, I've got a combine harvester, so.
Damn it.
Shocking. Yeah, most people probably have never heard that. No. I don't know how I found it. I don't know, but I heard it. It was like the most catchy thing. I always envisaged, if you had Phil Harding from Time Team.
If he had a band,
he would sound like that, I think.
Totally.
Because he's got that rawr way of talking and it's brilliant.
This is from my old homeland of Somerset, you know, and if I get a bit too much cider in me, I do start talking.
Oh, brilliant.
Very Somerset-like. but yeah, it's been pushed out of me a little bit for the last couple of years, but that is where I live when I was younger, so you know that kind of feels like it's his home. But combine harvester, obviously we're talking about farming. Farming is well old, I think. Is
absolutely, yeah,
it's shockingly old. I think when I was researching this, I mean, I knew it was old, but how old, I had no idea. 12,000 years old.
Wow.
12,000 yeah. People were starting farming 12,000 years ago. And as I was researching this, it was quite funny because I was always coming across, which ancient culture invented this first? Was it the ancient Egyptians or the ancient Chinese or the ancient Americans? No, basically, we've got China, the Fertile Crescent, Syria, Jordan and Mexico all discovered farming all around the same kind of time. So it was clearly, you know, something that was worldwide. And this has been quite an interesting one because in the exhibition, I've asked people to vote on their favourite invention. And so far, farming and books are head-to-head, which is quite interesting, isn't it? You know, farming, cornerstone of civilization.
Well, books. Wide at upper, farming, actually. Yeah, but books.
Yeah.
Well, I'm impressed.
Yeah. I was like, because I thought when I did this, I thought bicycle, easy.
Yeah.
Or clocks.
Yep.
You know, how to tell the time. No, farming and bicycles. Amazing. Yeah, so ridiculous farming, how old it is. And again, I think it was actually 99% invisible again, that was had this really interesting link to farming and now how modern people now have lots of tooth decay because you grow grain, which is high in sugar, and you get a higher rate of tooth decay because just amazing. Amazing. Anyway, have you had a chance to think about spoons, forks and knives?
Yes. So I'm thinking that a lot of the main inventions, a lot of the people that did it first and the people that were really, really smart were the people in Asia. I'm leaning to it's not going to be table knife. I've put that one aside. It's not that. So it's between fork and spoon.
Okay.
I'm thinking, well, they would have used, you know, chopsticks and things like that to eat with.
Okay.
So they probably wouldn't have had a fork. So I'm going to say it's the spoon.
Okay, so and then what's next?
Then it would be fork, then it would be table knife.
Nice. Well done, Mark. Shall I tell you the answer? Because you're spot on.
Oh, excellent.
You know, so the spoon was invented 3,000 years ago, you know, because you could use, you know, shells or, you know, something to scoop up with. So, yeah, that's 1,000 BCE, 3,000 years ago. Then the fork, I think you're absolutely right. I think people were using chopsticks, but a fork was only invented in the 7th century, so 1,400 years ago, which you can imagine kind of like pronging something. But the table knife, and I love that I said table knife, because not just knife, because knives have been around for a very long time, but actually a knife to actually have at the table, it's only in the 17th century, so 400 years ago. Before that, you know, hunting knives have been around for about 2.5 million years. But the actual table knife, you know, it's actually just on it. Rather than a hunting knife, you're just spearing things. 17th century. The fork was developed in the Byzantine, so you're right, Asia, kind of Asia, Fertile Crescent type of area. So wealthy nobles began using small, delicate, two-pronged forks to spear food instead of using their fingers. There you go. So, yes, so the first spoon. And, you know, this is inventioned bingo here. Ancient Egypt, of course. Good old ancient Egypt. First man-made spoon in ancient Egypt. It was quite funny, you know, if you don't know where things are made, ancient Egypt, ancient China, one of those. Okay, any talk of farming? Have you been on a farm? Clearly, you've probably been on a farm.
I've been around them. I've never lived on one, but I've always, like, when I grew up in a small town of Clive in Hawke's Bay, up until they sold it and turned it into a housing development behind us, that was always farming land.
Oh.
Clive was always farming land.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first jobs you get around there where you're not, you know, you're just a labourer from school, it's within the farming community. So, you know, I was an apple picker, I did thinning, I was a hay carter. So, I've done all that kind of stuff growing up.
Nice.
So it's always been around farms, yeah. And then, you know, Dad would do his running and you'd go with him sometimes. It'd always
through a farm.
Always be across farmland. And some of the tracks they did, it was privately owned area, but it was some massive hill that they would run up. So you would go and help mark out the track and you'd have to avoid all the leavings from the animals. And you know, you don't want to be the one that's, you know, do I have to open that farm gate there? There's a huge bull just sitting right next to us. Oh, he won't mind. And of course he does. And he just looks at you going, okay. But yeah, this massive, huge animal is just there. It's like, I don't want to go next to him. But
yeah,
if you're sitting shotgun, that's your job.
That's your job.
You're the gate man.
Yeah, I think farming is interesting because I think I wonder when that switch happened to, oh, I'm going to stay here actually, and I'm going to just plant something. I mean, it obviously wasn't just a one off. I'm going to, you know, Bob's going to sit over here and carry on. But it must have just been that evolution, and suddenly and slowly, you know, they're planting things, they're collecting things, they're staying in one place. And just that must have been such an interesting switch in the history of humans.
Well, there's something about having a home. If you've got a permanent home, you're always there. Otherwise, you're following the seasons to all the different places, to where all the different crops are growing, being a hunter and gatherer.
Do you want to know which was the first food roughly grown? Do you want to have a guess?
Wheat.
Ooh.
Wheat or rice?
No. No, you're well off, actually.
Really?
It's not a grain.
Ooh.
Yes. I'll give you, I'll give you a clue, actually.
So it's not a grain.
Yeah, so I'm going to tell you how long ago it was. So grains were 9,000 years ago. There was something cultivated nearly 11,500 years ago before grains.
Ooh.
Ooh, I've got you now, Mark.
Because I don't think it's potato.
No, it wasn't.
Because that was South America.
Yeah, it was in the Near East, though. So something.
What else do they
have? What could it be? Shall I put you out your misery?
Let's say like one of the cabbages, like a bok choy or something.
No, it was figs.
Really?
Yes. So cereals were grown in Syria as long as 9,000 years ago, while figs were cultivated even earlier, nearly 11,500 years ago. There you go. Just isn't that amazing that figs? Do you know, isn't there a fig that a female wasp has to kind of go in, die, and then the whole fig then is fertilised and it's actually a juicy, like, fig. Have you heard of that? Maybe I'm making that up.
I've heard of that. Well,
okay.
I'll remember that one.
Google that later. Yeah. But I'm sure that there's a fig that is only a decent fig if a wasp has gone in and died in it.
Oh, well, the fig's doing us a favour, I suppose. But
yes. Yeah. So we had figs and cereals. Domestication of cattle, yeah, again, about 10,000 years ago. So I just find that so fascinating, and that such a switch from nomadic hunting to growing food, having permanent settlement, and then you have civilizations and things starting growing. It's just, wow, that's just, I find that absolutely amazing. Do you know that in the Wild Upper, we've also got some amazing farmers from farming inventions here? The first commercially successful mechanical milking machine was created in the Wairarapa. There you go. And a mobile honey harvester and an adjustable drenching race. There you go, for sheep. Wow.
Impressive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a Wairarapa farmer now called Richard Toswell who's trying to, he's got a farm called the Wairarapa Innovation Farm, and he's focusing on increasing clover and legume content on uncountable hill country to see if he could advance grazing management techniques. There you go. Right, one more song, Mark. One more song, and then it's almost over. Okay, this one is a little bit more subtle. Enjoy this one. Okay, here we go. There you go, Mark. Shall I give you a clue to what this one was?
You're going to have to. I wasn't paying attention to the lyrics.
No, we were just chatting, weren't we? It's Coldplay, obviously, and it's Clocks.
Does he say that?
He does. It's the title, of the title of the song.
Is it in the lyrics, though?
I think it was at least once.
Oh, I mustn't have been paying close of attention then.
Clocks. Mark, do you have a clock?
Do I have a...
I thought that was going to be
I have a wristwatch. I have Dad's old wristwatch, which is my alarm clock.
Do you know, all the clocks in my house have all completely run out of batteries. So today I had no clocks. I don't wear a watch. And I was like, I don't know what the time is. Like, I was meeting my colleague to take her to work. And I was like, I have no idea what time it actually is. It was like, I look at the sun, you know, is it 8 o'clock yet? I have no idea.
I do have a clock. I do have, it's not working, but I do have a proper clock. I have a grandfather clock.
I always wanted a grandfather.
It was a family heirloom, and it was passed to me. I was like, that's so cool. It needs restoring, and I'm putting that aside. I've heard what that costs.
Imagine.
But I've got all the bits there. It's taller than I am. Wow. It's brilliant. So,
did you ever read the book Tom's Midnight Garden? And that had a clock in it that would strike 13 in the middle of the night, and a whole garden would kind of appear at the back. I always wanted a grandfather clock because I wanted to have this.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard stories. I don't know if it was this one or not, but you know, where family would go and stay, and they go, "Can we stay in a different room because it's too loud?"
No. Oh my goodness. Okay. Do you want to have a guess where clocks were invented? Which ancient civilization created clocks?
It depends what your definition of the word clock is.
All right, timekeeping then.
Okay, timekeeping. Oh, it was either going to be a sundial or one of those.
Oh yeah, water. What is
the sand? What are they? Yeah, maybe something like, because I know the mechanized ones came much, much later.
Yep.
But of those two,
1360, the first mechanized clock.
Now, is that the one that would only make a noise on the hour? It had no...
Probably.
I read they had no hands.
Yeah.
There was nothing. And it would just go dong every hour. So you had to pay attention to when the hour was.
You're like, I've missed
it. Then there was an hour hand.
Yep.
But there was no minute hand. And then the minute hand. And then much later on, a second hand.
You didn't, what are they going to add next?
At the same time. But, you know, for a while there, it was just a bong every hour. Like what you hear, like if you're in Carterton and you hear everything going, okay, it's about that time.
Yeah.
But as for the precision of what's in between, apparently it didn't have that. But of the...
Which civilization?
A civilization for a sundial. That's
where's a nice sunny country?
Persia.
Close. Ancient Egypt. Ancient Egypt again! Yeah. Come on! But bingo, ancient Egypt. Ancient Egypt, about 3,200 years ago.
Wow.
But you're right, it was timekeeping was used when they first watched the sun and the moon, kind of, you know, sunrise, sunset, and water clocks, and incense clocks and sundials. Yeah, so I can imagine, you know, you're burning something and it's, you know, it takes three hours to burn down. But you're right, the first basic mechanical clock was designed in 1360 and basically remained unchanged until Dutchman Christian Huygens invented a superior pendulum clock in 1656. So quite, it's a long time, is it, to be stuck with a very basic clock?
And you look at the engineering that's in those things.
Yes.
It's insane. I've seen it on that TV show, The Repair Shop.
Yeah.
Where they got their, you know, they had special glasses on, they got these tiny little cogs and they're just putting them. It's like, how would you have made, I mean, repairing it's hard enough, but making that?
Yeah.
The engineering that goes into that?
Well,
oh.
We are almost, Mark, out of time, shockingly. But if you do want to learn more about the expedition, got a great publisher, not quite your publication, kind of. It's yeah. only, you know, quite thin. But it does tell you all about the history of some of the invention, all the inventions.
Well, and it's not just the four or whatever it was that we spoke about today. There's quite a few others there that you
there
can
are.
See.
Well, there's 16 in the main area, but then you have this challenge of first things first. So if you haven't paid attention to what Mark said about knives, forks and spoons, you can go and test it out yourself. But the show is on till the 6th of December, so a nice long time to go and have a vote of which is your favourite invention and go and check out some of these stories. Mark, it's been so nice to chat to you this morning. I can't believe an hour's already up.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's like we're about halfway. No.
No, we're done. We're done. Going to have a cup of coffee.
Excellent.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to Adatoy Pathways to Art. Next week, we're back to normal with some artists to talk about their main gallery shows, but I hope you enjoyed this one. And, go and have a look at Pantage yourself and see which inventions you like yourself. Okay. See you next time. Bye, everyone.